Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sports Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in science while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life.
Welcome to our episode today, which is about bioplastics. Joining us today is Sarah from the Pharmaceutical Chemistry Department. Welcome, Sarah.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
My name is Agnes.
And this is Sarah. And let's dive in directly into the topic.
Sure.
Can you give us a brief introduction of your research and why is it important in the context of environmental sustainability and human health?
Of course, it's actually a very nice topic for all of our listeners as well. So my research is all about digging into how bioplastics affect our cells. You know, these plastics that are actually supposed to be more eco-friendly. And we're now in this era where we're trying to be kinder to the planet. And bioplastics seem like a good idea, right? But here's the thing, we really don't know much about what happens to these bioplastics when they get close and personal with our cells. And the question is, are they really as green as they seem? Or do they have some surprises for us? And I mean, just imagine using a plastic, like a bioplastic bag. And sure, it's made from renewable stuff and renewable resources. But what does it do when it breaks down and comes into contact with our cells? That's a big unknown. And that's pretty much the puzzle I'm trying to solve with my research. So in a nutshell, to give you like a very brief overview of it, is I'm putting together the puzzle pieces between doing right by our planet, but also making sure we're not accidentally doing something not so great for ourselves. So my goal is to really contribute towards a more like safety by design approach.
Well, this seems to be a very, very important topic. But let's start with the basics. So what exactly are bioplastics and where is actually the difference between bioplastics and conventional plastics? So why is this shift towards exploring those alternatives?
Absolutely. Let's just break it down. So bioplastics, they are the newer, more eco-friendly player in the whole plastic game. And what makes them stand out is where they come from. So with conventional plastics, they are born from fossil fuels. And with these bioplastics, they are made, as I mentioned earlier, from renewable sources like plants or corn or other organic materials. Now, the interesting part is that not all bioplastics are the same. So some of them are actually biodegradable or even compostable. So they can basically break down over time without leaving any traces. That sounds awesome, right? That would be ideal. The catch is that they don't really do it naturally, especially not if they are in your backyard, in your compost. So they do need some very specific conditions to really break down. And that big shift towards exploring those bioplastics comes from the this desire to be kinder to our environment. We're now very conscious about the plastic pollution problem, and bioplastics, they seem to address it. And they do have this promise of breaking down, which makes them very interesting for consumers as well. But there is really a big but because that breakdown really only happens in special facilities.
Yeah, this is also what I'm asking myself. So what kind of what kind of conditions do you need to be able to break down those bioplastics?
Mm-hmm. So basically, you need a very specific pH level, very specific temperatures, and also very specific moisture level. And you all have that if you are processing it in an industrial setting. But for now, that's not being done completely. And it really needs to be disposed of separately from the regular plastic, and that's not always the consumer can't really tell most of the time, is it regular plastic, conventional plastic, or is it bioplastic? And that's where that whole problem comes into place with the disposal of the stuff.
All of that is very, very interesting, and I didn't know most of it because we often hear about the health effects of micro and nanoplastic from conventional plastic. But how does it work for bioplastics, and what motivated you exactly to do your PhD in this topic?
Mm-hmm. That's actually a great question. And I mean, right off the bat, I can say that I was lucky enough that I was offered that PhD position because I was doing my master thesis in the same department.
Uh-huh.
So that is kind of how I slipped into it. And I was lucky enough to have offered such an interesting topic to me that I said yes without any hesitation. And well, when it comes to the research of bioplastic, it does have a lot of traction at the moment. It's a very very popular topic at the moment, and there is a lot of papers and new research pouring in. But most of that, like considering bioplastic, most of the research that we see is concerned about the how to make and break these bioplastics. So it's all literally focused on the industrial and production side of things. But not a lot of research is actually conducted for the health effects of the breakdown products. Because we think that because it's bioplastics, and even this little word bio already suggests that it's like totally healthy. And,
yes.
There's not any problems that we as human beings or even living beings, that there's anything that we need to be concerned about. But that's not really how it is in reality, because you see, as it's more easily to break down because it has like these different pathways of breaking down more than the conventional plastics, there is the concern that it may create even more micro and nanoplastics than conventional plastics do. And for them to really break down completely, as I mentioned, again, it needs those specific conditions. Otherwise, it doesn't break down completely and leaves these micro nanoplastics that we don't want to have.
So actually, this requires a lot of discipline from the consumers to get rid of the bioplastics.
Yes.
So that the purpose is kind of so that it makes sense to use them.
True, true. So I think that having some research in that area also allows the consumer to make more informed consumer choices, if you will, to really have that out there, like, that is what it is, and that is how it breaks down, and that is the pros, and that it's the cons.
To inform the consumers, then,
exactly.
It's very important. Yes.
Exactly.
So I wanted to ask about your research because it is very difficult for me to imagine how you investigate the effects of those bioplastics. So what kind of methodologies or experiments are you conducting? And did you find some surprising findings or challenges that you have faced during your research?
So at the moment, I've been elbow deep in cell culture experiments. So what I'm doing is I'm working with different cell lines, both healthy and cancerous ones, to see how they react to the bioplastics. So we're talking about a range of experiments that give us insights into everything from cell growth, morphology, oxidative stress, and also cell cycle, migration, proliferation, and potential damage. So this is a whole spectrum of experiments that we're doing right now. And the super cool thing about it is that I'm not only sticking to one approach. So usually you have 2D cell cultures, but I also have some 3D cell culture methods in my toolkit.
What does it mean? So what is the difference between 2D and 3D cell culture methods?
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting question. And I didn't know before I started it. So usually, if you imagine with the cell culture, you have those petri dishes, right? You have those flasks and dishes, and then you seed your cells and they grow in a monolayer. So you have like your lawn, your little lawn of cells. So it's 2D because it's just one layer. And with the 3D cell culture, that tries to mimic what is happening within our body or like within a living ecosystem. Because, of course, cells are not behaving in nature in a 2D monolayer, but they're forming like multiple layers and 3D structures. So if we're talking 3D cell culture, that means that we are trying to mimic that. And we're basically doing these little round spheroids. We call them spheroids. It's basically just a round little cell clump that is like multiple layers. And then we're doing the same experiments as we do with the 2D cell culture, treating them the same way. And then we have a new, basically looking at the same picture, but from a different perspective.
So are these cells actually always the same number of cells in these clumps? Or how do you control this?
Well, wow, that's a very specific question.
It's just difficult for me to imagine.
Yes, I mean, you do have to see the cell, the same cell number every time, so that you have a comparative framework. Of course, I mean, you want to repeat your experiments, and then of course, with every repetition, you need to do the same as before because otherwise, you can't compare.
Yeah.
And there is some known amount of cells that you want to seed so that they do form these clumps and these round shapes. But you can vary that. So you can, usually what you do is in the beginning you have like validation experiments to try out different cell numbers and then see what works best for your setting. Mm-hmm. And then you stick with one of your choices, whatever that is, and then you stick with it through all of the repetitions.
That is very, very interesting. I didn't know the difference between 2D and 3D culture.
Me neither. This is totally new to me.
Yes.
Oh, it was for me as well.
And I was wondering that since we were talking about the public and how should we inform the consumer about it, and given the existing research on conventional plastics, how do the effects of bioplastics compare to them?
That's a great question. So actually, when we compare the effects of bioplastics with those of conventional plastics, there are some intriguing twists. So one key difference lies in the digestion. So bioplastics, they can be broken down by enzymes. So what that means is that we usually with conventional plastic, we basically have mechanical breakdown of the plastics. So if they are in our ecosystems or, for example, in the ocean, through the waves, they have some wear and tear. So that's mechanical breakdown. Okay. But with the bioplastics, we also have enzymatical breakdown. Mm-hmm. And that is due to their nature of being born from organic materials.
Sorry for interrupting you. I was just wondering if there are unique considerations or differences that research and the public should be aware of.
So, I mean, I've mentioned it a little bit earlier. So the interesting thing is that when we already know that micro nanoplastics, there's already a lot of publications and papers about it, then we do have some concerns about the micro nanoplastics because they have the ability to infiltrate all of our organs. But where the research stands at the moment is we don't exactly know. We know that they are in those organs, but we don't know the effect of it. And that's the same with bioplastics, even more unknowns because not a lot of research is going into the health aspect of the bioplastic side of things, as I already said. And what is alarming as well is that there may be even more micro nanoplastics with the bioplastics because now we not only have the mechanical breakdown, but also the enzymatical breakdown. So we have different ways, different pathways of creating these micro nanoplastics. So there may be even more of those concerning small little pieces.
Oh, wow.
And as I said, it's the full breakdown that they potentially and ideally do. They don't always do that in natural settings. So that is where also, again, the safety by design aspect comes into place.
Yeah, of course. Not because it says bio, it means it's healthy.
Exactly, exactly. And we want to have, I mean, for sure there are different, as I said, there are different types of bioplastics. So there are also better and worse alternatives in this bioplastic field. And so the idea is to shed light what of these alternatives are actually better than the others, and then have some bioplastics that are really not only good for our planet, but also good for our health.
Yeah, so you've mentioned that and talked a lot about the safety of bioplastics and that there must be contributed a lot to ensure the safety of those products. Could you elaborate on what that means and share also some insights, or do you have some recommendations for ensuring the safety of those bioplastics?
Sure, sure. So, I mean, when we're talking about contributing to the safety of bioplastics, it's all about adopting a mindset of safety by design. So now we, not all bioplastics are created equal in terms of safety, and that is where it gets interesting. So just imagine it like, you know, a recipe if you're cooking at home. Then, of course, the recipe and also the ingredients, they matter.
Yes.
You end up with different products, whether or not you're following the recipe or which recipe and which ingredient you use. So that is the same thing with the bioplastic production. So recipe and ingredients, they matter. And that is exactly where we can step in and adopt that safety by design, right?
Yes. And now that you mentioned your research, I was wondering, because research is not easy and it always comes with challenges, right?
True.
obviously, I was wondering what were some obstacles that you encounter? And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's also very inspirational to talk about because, you know, it's this whole PhD journey is one that we're kind of all in the same boat. And of course, I had my fair share of obstacles as well. I mean, I'm currently in my second year of my PhD, so I'm sure I will encounter even more obstacles down the road. But so far, one of the two main obstacles that I am facing is the variability of cells. Because it is a living biological system, of course, they don't always perform the same way. And then I'm repeating my experiments over and over again. And then I'm not really finding it very reproducible. And for example, I do an experiment for the first time and then it turns out just great and the results are very nice, but then I repeat it second and third time and it shows something completely different. You really have to think about your experiment setup, because otherwise, I mean, your variance is like off the roof. And then also something I'm really struggling with is the ever-changing landscape of research pouring in about the plastic research and bioplastic research. So as I said, it's a very hot topic at the moment. So publications are pouring in and it's very hard for me to stay on top of it. So there's a lot of reading material. And that has been quite challenging for me to really stay on top of that.
Yes. How do you actually foresee the future of research in this area? And do you have any recommendations for fellow researchers interested in bioplastics?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, this is a this is an area and topic that is like not enough people can research it. So don't ever feel like it's saturated, even though there's already a lot of publications about it. And I'd also say that it's a very collaborative effort that has to be made. So of course, I'm also not working alone. So we have our master students and then we have our project partners and we have those sure fixes where we talk to other research groups and even other universities. And then so I'd say try to collaborate with different research groups and I mean, also talk to others about if you have any concerns or any problems, because most of the time, others are struggling with similar things.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So it does make a big, big difference to just open up and say, you know what, I'm kind of struggling with that. Or and also what I noticed as well. Maybe I have to say that as well, is when I'm feeling kind of stuck in my research and for weeks, kind of no progress is being made. And it can feel quite embarrassing to say it to someone that I'm kind of, I feel like for weeks there's nothing happening.
But do you have the opportunity to talk to your PI about it?
I do. I'm very lucky to have a great PI and also even better colleagues. So I love I love my group that I feel so lucky to have all of these really wonderful people around me. Mm-hmm. But still, sometimes you do feel embarrassed of saying out loud, you know, I'm struggling with this and that. But I noticed that it makes such a big difference also for the group dynamic and your research to open
up. It's always important to talk about it, because we most feel the same. Like probably we all feel the same, but we don't really discuss it or talk about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's always better to share also those struggles and then to cope with it. It's then easier when you share it.
For sure.
So I have a question related to your lifestyle as a PhD student, because you've mentioned a lot of struggles and I wanted to ask, do you have some kind of tool that you're using to balance your PhD life or mental health?
I love that question. And actually I do. So something that has helped me for quite some years by now, but I also find it very helpful for my PhD journey, is meditation. So I started meditating, eight years ago.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, it was quite a slow process, of course. But it helps me balance and focus a lot. So basically with my PhD journey, I noticed that it helps me a lot with stress and anxiety. And those can be like some very common struggles in academia in general. And I feel like taking my time in the morning and just sitting down, having some peace and quiet, helps me to really focus for the tasks ahead and to really keep my calm amidst any pressures or deadlines that are coming up.
Yeah, those are specific benefits that you have for a PhD. So for our listeners, do you have any specific tips for people that want to start meditating?
I'd say start slow.
Yeah.
Start quite small. I mean, if you think you can do 5 minutes, then do 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Set the bar not higher, but a little lower than you would think you can do. And then one of the main things with meditation, I think, is consistency. So do less, but do it every day. And that is where you will definitely see the difference even after 2 weeks of doing it. That is what happened to me. Like in the beginning, it was, the progress was so fast. And then at some point, of course, after years of meditating, you kind of hit the plateau. But in the beginning, it's so motivating because you see the difference day to day. Let's say keep it up and try different techniques maybe also, because you know, we are all different.
Yeah.
So, of course, different techniques work for different people. So find out whatever meditation technique works for you and then just stick to it and do it every day. And don't overdo it. I mean, don't say, I'm meditating now for an hour every day. No, just do a few minutes and you'll see the difference.
Thank you so much for this insightful information about your personal well-being and how do you manage your PhD through meditation. But as a final remark for the bioplastics topic, can you make a wrap-up for our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, to really wrap it up and conclude what I'm researching, I'm trying to find a balance between being ecologically friendly and also doing good for our health. So to really find that, that balance between sustainability and also healthy choices, consumer choices. And I also think that we are at the moment at a cross section for in that area of research. So I'd say don't hesitate if you want to go into that research area. If any of our listeners are interested in it, then I'd say really go for it, because we do need more people going into that, those health effects of the bioplastics, where there's really not at the moment, we don't have a lot of light shed on it. I think it's also very important to, as fellow researchers, to really be, as I mentioned, very collaborative and really see it as a collective effort that we're putting into.
It's a teamwork.
Yes, it is. It really is. And it makes that whole journey so much more enjoyable, I think. So I'd really want to emphasize that as a takeaway for any other researchers. And so basically, in a nutshell, we can say that curiosity, collaboration, and also a dash of patience are really the guiding stars of our PhD journey. So let's just keep pushing boundaries.
And what can you recommend for the consumers?
Oh, yes, true. So I'd say read labels. Mm-hmm. So that for sure you can see, are you having conventional plastic or bioplastic in your hands, and then dispose them accordingly.
Sarah, thank you so much that you shared your insights about your research, and also that you gave us and our listeners valuable tips for mental health and mental well-being.
Well, thank you, Agnes and Sarah, for having me.
Yes,
I really had fun with our conversation.
Thanks.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts, Sarah
and Agnes. Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and experts' contributions on how to navigate the career path of a young scientist. Next month's topic will be about long COVID and sports with Johanna. This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional, and Sports Sciences.
Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening. See you next time.